This is the Adam Gold Show.
Oh, it's so festive.
Very festive.
It is festive. This is the Adam Gold Show. Also festive. Is it festive? I don't think it's festive.
Sure.
Welcome. I'm Adam. Dennis Cox. Sitting in for V to the Victoria, who is hunting for a Christmas ham. I don't know what she's doing. But that's fine. She'll be back tomorrow.
She go to the honey baked ham.
She could. She could go
just
to
just go to the honey baked ham.
Get in line at the ham jam.
Yes.
That used to block my path home. I used to go home up Six Forks Road here in Raleigh. And
Six Forks
already has a problem. Then the ham jam comes, and then we need infrastructure simply to handle ham jam.
They literally put up signs saying, delays, take alternate route,
right.
Ham.
I get it.
Literally up in Raleigh.
First of all, this is so inside baseball to those of us in Raleigh, but everybody listening in Raleigh understands this. The parking lot where that honey baked ham is, which is adjacent to a Dunkin' Donuts. So I know, Dennis, you know it very well.
Yeah, I know to drive by it.
So it is the worst. It's not just the worst parking lot for a fast foodish type place,
mm-hmm.
because it's chewed up and it wrecks your car. The coming in or out of the Dunkin' Donuts, it's almost like going right off the curb.
Yeah.
It's just awful. But when I used to use Six Forks, I would frequent the establishment because Dunkin' Donuts has great coffee. The honey baked ham, we've used the honey baked ham spot before. But what they need essentially is their own raised roadway, right? Above Six Forks. So you can go on a little ramp and you go above it, and then everybody can kind of stay off the road because Six Forks is just a mess anyway. So, incredible drama at the World Cup today. Real quick. Australia, who had already beaten Tunisia. I like the English pronunciation of Tunisia. I like Tunisia better. Australia, who beat Tunisia, had to win or draw versus Denmark today, who drew in their first match with Tunisia. And Australia scored in the second half and won 1-0 over Denmark. Denmark's good. Denmark, without Christian Eriksen, their best player, made it to the semifinals of the Euros. Was it 2 years ago? 2 years ago.
Sounds right.
Eriksen, before the tournament, nearly died on the field.
Yeah.
Right? He went into cardiac arrest in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's fine. He's playing now. He plays for Man U now. But that's a pretty big upset that Denmark did not go through the group. And that really goes back to drawing with Tunisia in their opening match. In the France-Tunisia match, France didn't have to do anything. They just had to show up. They didn't start anybody. They basically started Pepe Le Pew.
Oh.
Like seven versions of Pepe Le Pew.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. They have a great team.
And a mime.
But they didn't. Right. Marcel Marceau played. But they didn't play well. And Tunisia wins 1-0. France actually scored the equalizing goal with right before the final whistle, but they waved it off. I think they waved it off for offside. I'm not really sure why.
I had the sound off.
So they waved it off for offside. It literally in the last minute of added time. Super exciting. It didn't matter. France still wins the group, but it matters to Tunisia. Their fans are going bonkers because they beat France. Awesome. Absolutely awesome. And we're going to start with more awesome. I could just shout USA, USA, USA. I won't, but I will tell you that the former Captain America started things off very well for the U.S.
For the captain, Tyler Adams. Austin McKay, Des making a big run. It's meant for him. Des is snuck in behind. Des in the middle. Pulitzer! Behind Des in the middle. Pulitzer! Scores! Might have paid the price.
Yeah.
But the U.S. takes the lead.
You did. Can I hear it in Spanish?
Mira para Sergiño Dest. El toque medio posición. Gol. Gol. Gol.
Yeah. It's better in Spanish. That's Andres Cantor, right? It's my man.
Estados Unidos, Christian Pulisic lo hizo. Gran jugada, pero enorme jugada. Y después este golpazo del 10 que dejó la vida por el gol. Gana Estados Unidos 1-0.
Incredible. Good for Christian Pulisic. Two pieces I want to direct your attention to. Both of the guys who wrote it have been on this program recently. Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News wrote about Pulisic's goal, and Brian Strauss of SI also wrote about Pulisic scoring the goal. And Christian Pulisic has taken a lot of arrows from U.S. soccer fans, myself included. I am not the biggest Christian Pulisic fan. But, man, there is one thing you can count on Christian Pulisic to do, and that is expend everything and move forward. That's all he knows, man. Straight ahead. He's not a great passer, right? He's not even that good on set pieces anymore. But he will get forward. And boy, he had a nose for the net last night. Superb service from Weston McKennie, who created the long ball that Sergiño Dest headed across the box to Pulisic. But my gosh, what a gutty, brave finish. In hockey, they call it taking a hit to make a play. That's what Christian Pulisic did. Took a hit to make a play.
Oh, yeah.
He's hurt. We'll see if he's able to come back on Saturday for Netherlands very quickly.
Holy balls!
There you go. Dest, I loved Sergiño Dest in this match. Tyler Adams, the captain, is just the man. He controls the entire game. And for U.S. soccer fans on Twitter, just shut up about, why didn't Berhalter do this? Why did they sit back? I don't think they sat back. I think the game changed. The game changed at halftime. They almost got the second goal right before half, but the McKennie through ball to Tim Weah, which was a beautiful through ball, they were ruled offside, which the right call. I mean, we can't argue with it. Technology told us that Weah was slightly off. But Pulisic's out. Are you going to complain that they put Aaronson on? Now, Aaronson wasn't great, but are you going to complain they put Aaronson on? Half you idiots want Aaronson in the starting lineup. I don't mean idiots, Doug, but we can't complain about every single thing. Why did we just sit back? The game changed. They weren't going to extend themselves and know that Iran needed a goal because Iran's good enough to score goals. And the United States has scoring problems. The last thing they wanted was to have to get another goal. They wanted another goal, but they didn't have to get another goal. The game changed. If you can't recognize that, if you can't get out of your little bubble that you have to bash Berhalter at every step, I don't like Greg Berhalter, really. I'm not a Berhalter guy. But you cannot criticize him for what they did yesterday. They freaking got through the group. Geez, stop. Just stop.
You're in the knockout stage. Who cares what happens?
And they can beat Netherlands. Taylor Twellman, tell us, can they beat the Netherlands?
There are multiple ways that you can try to get rid of the pain, but we are talking about not Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball and breathing. We're talking about a player that has to run, on average, 7 to 9 miles a game. Yes, they can beat the Netherlands. Absolutely, 100%. They need Christian Pulisic. However, we haven't seen Giovanni Reyna other than 8 minutes against England. FIFA came into this tournament, guys, listing the top 10 players under the age of 23. Giovanni Reyna of the United States of America was listed third, and we've seen him for 8 minutes.
Yeah, that is a failure, I think, of Berhalter in the first two matches. It was not a failure of Berhalter yesterday. That was not a match for Gio Reyna. Just wasn't. Unless they were going to bring him on instead of Aaronson, which I frankly wouldn't have, because the way Aaronson plays is the way he didn't play well, But the way Aaronson plays is what you needed in that match. You needed somebody who would hound the ball. I expect we'll see Reyna against Netherlands. I do. I expect that we will see Reyna against the Netherlands. But holy cow, if the knee-jerk reaction is, why didn't we do this? Why didn't we do that? They won. You know how many World Cup matches the United States has won ever?
Not much.
I think 6.
Okay.
They won a match. Gosh, over yourselves.
And the only goal they gave up was a PK.
They've been incredible defensively.
Yeah.
Incredible defensively. So Turner was good. Tim Ream has just been a stud. Gosh, Tim, 35-year-old Tim Ream. Just unbelievable. All right, let me get to a couple of more things. We're actually going to talk more soccer here in a second. Ryan O'Hanlon of ESPN is going to join us. NC State with a win over William & Mary last night. Look, they did what was necessary, right? They didn't qualify for the Big Ten ACC Challenge, so they went out and they scheduled the game against William & Mary. That's fine. But here's how I know. By the way, Casey Morsell had a big game. How do I know Casey Morsell had a big game? Listen to this. This is how I knew.
The Canes over the chance coming in, and it squeaks past Coach Etkoff.
Casey Morsell.
And the Penguins get on the board.
Even during the Hurricanes game, we could tell that Casey Morsell was having himself a night. 23.6 of 9 from deep. Like, I appreciate that we all, as Hurricanes fans, got a chance to hear that. I think that was fantastic. Terquavion Smith, Jarkel Joyner, Jack Clark, all good last night, but it was the Casey Morsell show, and that's good. They've needed some other guys to provide some offense. They were complaining about Morsell last year, so good for him. Casey Morsell, 23, and we're going to talk to Brian Geisinger later. State team is interesting to me. I don't know how good they can be because I'm not sure their defense is going to be great, but they're certainly going to be interesting offensively. UNC and Duke are both in action tonight. Heels are at number 10 Indiana. Duke is home to 25th ranked Ohio State. Both teams coming off either disappointing losses or strange losses. Carolina lost 2 out of 3 in Oregon. Duke lost the championship game to Purdue. This is the final year of the ACC Big Ten Challenge. It has been 5 years since the ACC won this thing. They are ahead 5-3 in this competition. The final fake rankings show for college football happened yesterday. Georgia, Michigan, TCU, and USC were the top four. I actually think that USC and TCU will flip. Even though TCU, with a win over Kansas State in the Big 12 title game, would be undefeated, and Southern Cal would have one loss, but Southern Cal has a chance to avenge that loss when they play Utah. Their only loss was at Utah on a game-ending two-point conversion. I think USC will ultimately end up in third if USC wins the Pac-12. Here's my question. How is it possible that Alabama is 6 and Tennessee is 7. Tennessee's got 2 better wins than Alabama. Alabama's best wins are against the state of Mississippi.
Plus, Tennessee beat Alabama.
They beat Alabama and they won at LSU. I can't fathom. Boo Corrigan. What are we looking at on the committee, Boo?
I think at the end of the day, we talk a lot about wins. In this committee, and we talked about that earlier this year with TCU, and they kept winning games and they kept finding ways to win games. And you know, that's a team that over the last 4 weeks is, I think, on defense given up about 19 points a game. So obviously winning these games does matter. It's something that we look at, something we talk about more than anything else.
Okay, head-to-head's gotta matter. Now neither Alabama nor Tennessee has a game left, so If it were me, Tennessee would get the fourth spot if either Southern Cal or TCU fell apart. It would be Tennessee. I think Tennessee has, I know they lost to South Carolina. I know they lost to Georgia. Ohio State lost to the best team they played on their home field. by a lot and really only played one other really good team all year. All right, back to USA, USA, USA through to the round of 16. Ryan O'Hanlon from ESPN, author of Net Gains, Inside the Beautiful Games Analytics. I'll ask you an analytics question just to get us started talking about the game. What did analytics tell us the final score should have been? What were the expected goals yesterday?
Well, the analytics would tell us that the final score should have been something with a decimal point at the end. it would have told us that the final score was impassable. I think what the analytics told us was that the U.S. could have scored more than two goals in the first half.
Yes.
And then the U.S. did not come close to scoring a goal in the second half. And Iran probably didn't create enough chances to score a single goal in the second half, but they were very close to creating enough chances to score a goal in the second half. And I guess I'm now realizing that everything I'm saying the analytics told us, you could have just watched the game.
Yeah, we did.
Seen that for yourself.
I did. I watched the game while I was doing the show, watched the first half of the game while I was supposed to be concentrating on my job, and watched the second half of the game. I'm just telling you this, Ryan. I'm not letting anybody else here watch the second half of the game on my drive home. So let's get right to it. You're just the way you – what you took out of this game, what was it?
I think, like, the team is just – it's better than I thought it was going to be, I think, is the main takeaway. Like, I don't think it's – like, we had this game where Iran is just a very good defensive team. Yeah, they did give up six goals to England. That did happen. But England finished really well, and also England can just, you know, get on a heater, right?
Yeah.
Because they have so many good players. But, like, historically, Iran is a great defensive team. Carlos Kiros is – an incredibly frustrating manager for people that root for his teams, but he builds a great defense. And the way the group stages played out, this wasn't just a normal game, right? This was a game where Iran, they just needed to draw. Like, it had different incentives. And Iran just had everyone behind the ball. So when that's happening, it's very hard to create high-quality opportunities, right? Because, like, there's just no space. So a lot of times you'll see, you know, maybe a deflection will lead to a goal. You'll see a set piece that leads to a goal. Like, those are the ways you break these teams down. You get a handball in the box or something, right? And then that opens the floodgates. But the U.S. didn't need any of that. They created an incredibly high-quality opportunity because the U.S. now has a player like Weston McKennie who plays for Juventus in the Champions League, who plays a perfect ball onto a perfect run from Serginho Dest, who plays for AC Milan in the Champions League, who heads it across to Christian Pulisic, who makes – hasn't been talked about enough, in my opinion. The run he made was absolutely incredible. He's like 30 yards from the goal when Weston McKennie plays the ball in the first place. And Pulisic is, you know, the greatest American soccer of all time, and he gets on the end of it, and it's, you know, essentially a tap-in into a near wide-open net. And being able to create that chance against an Iran defense like that is something the U.S. would have never been able to do in the past, in my opinion.
Ryan O'Hanlon from ESPN, author Net Gains, Inside the Beautiful Games Analytics Revolution, and that has nothing to do with what we're talking about right now, but it is a fascinating look into how that has sort of transformed the way we look at soccer. The thing about this game, I thought McKennie, even though he can't go very long because of fitness, he was injured and wasn't playing for Juventus, but we saw, in the first half, we saw the value of McKennie's creativity, and I think we saw the value of Serginho Dest, who was, I thought, part of almost every single American chance. McKennie had the through ball to Tim Weah, who was, I think his kneecap was offside, and that was enough to wave to wave off that goal. But I thought that through ball might have been better than the ball he played in the air to Dest for the goal.
Yep. I agree. The way he kind of had to, like, slice across it with the inside of his foot to create outside spin. I think it actually was even harder. But yeah, he's the Bruce Arena famously described Clint Dempsey as someone who — I can't really say this word on radio, but let's just say he described him as someone who just, quote, just tries stuff.
Right.
Different word other than stuff. And I think McKennie is, like, in that same boat, right? Like, he'll give the ball away some, but, like, he tries things that other players on the team don't try, and it leads to, you know, basically should have led to two goals against Iran.
All right, from your perspective, and we always talk about Pulisic. We always talk about why we can't find a proper striker. I don't know that we ever talk enough about how good Tyler Adams is. I know I was listening this morning on the Sirius XM to guys talking about Adams not long for Leeds, like he is destined for bigger and better. How good is Tyler Adams in your eyes?
Yeah, so I would love to be the guy who says, don't sign a player because he does well at the World Cup. It's a lower competition level and it's only four games. Like, there's so much, such a larger body of evidence.
Yep.
But with Tyler Adams, I think you're seeing an accurate representation of just how good he is. I don't think he has a role maybe in a team like Manchester City, because they have such a specific way of playing,
right,
where every player on the team has to be like a 99.9 percentile like technician with the ball,
right?
Like, that's the main requirement that they have. But like, honestly, every other team in the world could use Tyler Adams. If I think of like the team that could use him the most, like Bayern Munich, right? Like, mm-hmm. they love to play this kind of high octane up and down style. And Tyler Adams like is amazing at cleaning up the messes within that style. So he's the real deal. Like, he's good enough, in my opinion, if he stays healthy, which has been an issue in the past, to basically play for any team in the world. And I do not think he's long for Leeds either.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of fascinated by watching Leeds, but I agree. I think he is probably out the door. Maybe after this year, they might get a lot for him because he is so steady in the midfield. Who has surprised you? And then I want to. We've got like a minute and a half left here. Who has surprised you with how well they've played?
Matt Turner, and not because I knew Matt Turner was a really great shot stopper.
Right.
He's been incredible with the ball at his feet. It looks terrible. He looks terrible with the ball at his feet.
Right.
But he made a great line breaking pass that ultimately opened things up for the first goal. And then the goal that was ruled out, he made an incredible like 40-yard pass on the ground under pressure to McKinney that set him up to play that pass. And there was a bunch of other moments where Turner like broke pressure with his ability to, you know, play a quick one or two touch pass. And for all the things I thought Matt Turner had in his, in his tool belt, being good with the ball to seat was not one, and he's been like lights out in possession.
He has been very good. I love everything about Matt Turner's game. My son's a keeper. It's all about shot stopping for him. There's so many other things. Real quick, your thoughts on USA Netherlands Saturday morning?
So Netherlands, they're not as good as the name suggests. It's not a vintage Netherlands team by any stretch of the imagination, but they're a very similar team to the U.S. in that they kind of tend to dominate possession. And so you think they're like a quote-unquote attacking team, but their real ability is suppressing goals, which is the same thing with the U.S. They don't score that much, but they don't give up any goals. So I think it's going to be a very like a 1-0 or a 0-0 into extra time, potentially shootout type game. I think it's going to be a very close, like, it's going to be decided by, like, who finishes the one or two decent chances that they get type game.
Just got it. Somebody has to figure out where Cody Gakpo is at all times.
Yeah.
He has scored in each of their matches. He is phenomenal and one of those great young players. Ryan O'Hanlon from ESPN. I appreciate your time. I've enjoyed talking. Hopefully we can continue talking well into this tournament if the U.S. continues to play well.
Would love to come back.
Ryan, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, have a good one.
You got it. All right, Ryan O'Hanlon from ESPN. Hit him up on Twitter. On Twitter. Never mind.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
This is the penultimate. Actually, I'm sorry. This is the last. I was using penultimate in a different for a different story or a little bit later on. This is the final Big Ten ACC challenge because the television contract with the Big Ten has completely taken it away from ESPN. They will not have access to any home games played by Big Ten schools. So they can't, the Big Ten ACC Challenge, which actually began as the Big East ACC Challenge, was wholly created by ESPN. It's been the only home of it. Now, theoretically, they could split it, I guess, with Fox, who now has the lion's share of the Big Ten tournament, Big Ten contract. But I guess there was no interest in doing it. And there really doesn't have to be. The Big Ten ACC Challenge didn't have to be something that we had forever. It will be replaced by the ACC-SEC Challenge, which I heard our friends Joe and Joe on the OG talking about it yesterday. And I think it's going to be difficult to have North Carolina or Duke play Kentucky since both of those schools are involved in annual four-team events with Kentucky. Carolina plays in that CBS Sports Spectacular, whatever it's called, and Kentucky is one of the teams. So every third year, Carolina is playing Kentucky in that. Duke, in the Champions Classic, is playing Kentucky every third year. Theoretically, in the year where both of them miss Kentucky, you could match them up. But it will not be, it's not going to be an annual. You're not going to see those teams play that much, even if they probably will match up. The SEC has actually become a pretty, I mean, I'm not going to use the word competent, but I think a very credible basketball league. I mean, the ACC could have also considered the Big 12, which if you ask people today, they will tell you that the Big 12 plays the best basketball. They're not traditionally the best basketball league, but the Big 12 has more really good basketball teams right now probably than any other conference. And that's just the way that has fallen. State, by the way, did not make it in. They finished, when you finish last in the ACC in a 15-team basketball league going up against a 14-team league like the Big Ten is, then somebody can't play. And in this case, it was NC State. That's the way they've basically done it. If you finish last, you don't play. And that's okay. No big deal. State will do it next year. Because I actually think State's going to be pretty good this year. Here's the one thing I like about NC State. And we'll talk about this more with Brian Geisinger coming up in our third hour today. I think State has an unusually high number of players who can literally get their own shot. And I'm not saying that they're better than Carolina or better than Duke or anything like that. They're different. And obviously Duke and Carolina are better. But I think in Duke's case, they struggle for offense. They struggle to create offense individually. That doesn't mean that they won't be able to solve that problem. I do think they will. But it's going to take some time. They're also dealing with 1,100 freshmen. Everybody on the team is a newcomer, basically, except for Jeremy Roach, Ryan Young up front. I mean, they've got Grandison is a transfer and is an older player too. But they're all new. Carolina's got a team where, yeah, I think Caleb Love and R.J. Davis can get their own. But for the most part, it's an offense that needs some rhythm and an offense that needs familiarity. So, individually, Pete Nance would probably beat Brady Manek in a one-on-one. But I don't know if he's better than Brady Manek is as a player for that team. Certainly not the Brady Manek that we saw the last 6 weeks of the season. I mean, Brady Manek was just every time they needed a big play, he made it. Every time. So that's a pretty big hole to fill for Carolina. And we have seen the Tar Heels struggle in games this year that they won. They struggled with Portland in the first game of the whatever, where they were in the Legacy or the Invitational. I don't know which one of the Nike tournaments brackets they were in. But they struggled with Portland deep into that game. It was a one possession game. And then they had a lead late on Iowa State, and then Iowa State closed the game on a big run. The Alabama game, 4 overtime. We could have won that game. I mean, it's going to take some time for Carolina to figure out, all right, this is how we play. It's the chemistry that happened at the end of last year was real. And it enhanced what is, I think, a very good basketball team. We got caught up in the run that really accentuated how good a team they could be. But you have to allow that some of that was a team that just got on a roll. I'm not saying they were as bad as we saw at times, but they also weren't as good as we saw at the end. It's closer to that. But it's not that. I think Carolina is definitely a team that will probably spend the entire year in the top 12. But I don't know that. I mean, the way I look at them, they could certainly get hot again and end up winning it all. But there's a lot of teams that fall into that category. It's a ton of teams that fall into that category. As for Duke, we're just going to have to. We know they're talented. We know this team got a whole bunch of guys who are going to be in the NBA. But Derek Lively isn't that good yet. Like, he doesn't make great big impacts on the game just yet. Derek Whitehead, same thing. We haven't seen it yet.
The way any of these teams are, especially Duke, like you mentioned, being such a young team, come January, February, they're going to look totally different than what they do right now in terms of how they play. These kids are just going to get better.
Right. I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
So to this point, we haven't seen Derek Lively be, you know, the number one recruit or the number two recruit. And we haven't seen Derek Whitehead be that guy. Kyle Filipowski was, I think, I'm just off the top of my head, I think he was ranked like 7th. I said this might have been to Brian Geisinger, who's going to join us again in our third hour. I said, I think that Filipowski is going to lead Duke in scoring more games than anybody else. And I absolutely believe that is going to be true. I think that will be clinched before the end of January. He just is a pure scoring big man. He can hit you from deep. He can score around the basket. He gets a lot of rebounds. He's going to score off offensive putbacks. He's really, really good. But ultimately, that team needs the guys who break you down in the middle of the their offense, whether it's Whitehead or Mitchell or Roach getting inside. Tyrese Proctor's going to have to beat his man off the bounce and get inside the lane just to create opportunities. But Duke's got a super array of talent. They just have to figure out how to play. They just have to do that. So, again, they're both going to be work in progresses. But just getting back to NC State before we take a quick break. I like the fact that they have multiple guys that can beat you off the dribble. Whether it's Joyner or Smith. And now you see another shooter develop in Casey Morsell. It's going to be fun to watch them play throughout the year. I don't think they're very good defensively. Not good enough. But I don't think they're very deep either. But they're going to be, I think, a fun team. They'll probably frustrate their fans because there will be games that State will lose that will make you mad, which always happens, I guess. But I think they're going to be a thorn in some pretty good teams this year because Smith can go for a big number, and I think Joyner can too. and they can complement that with a little bit of interior offense, and they've got a bunch of guys who can make shots, and that's what it is. Isn't that what Sidney Lowe said? Got to make shots. You got to make shots.
We play in North Carolina State, baby.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Spring training is right around the corner. So come for the games and have a ball in Arizona. With world-class resorts, unbeatable dining and nightlife, amazing scenery, and endless outdoor adventure. Make your visit unforgettable. Plan your getaway at myspringtraining.com.
The new head coach at the University of Nebraska, Matt Rhule, who went on Peter Schrager from NFL Network. He has a podcast called The Season. And Rhule was a guest on the podcast and discussed his former place of employ. Listen to this.
If you could do it all over again, what would be the one thing you would change looking back on it, as obviously it didn't work out with Super Bowl victories or anything like that?
I think I probably would probably take in another job. You know, I mean, I think it's a great place, you know, the wonderful people, but I just don't know if I was a fit there. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we talked about, hey, we're going to have a 4-year plan, a 5-year plan. You know, if you tell me, hey, we got a 2-year plan, then I'm going to go get signed a bunch of free agents and do it. So, you know, what was a 4-year plan became a 2-year and 5-game plan real quick. And
interesting.
It's not about, hey, it's not, and I'm not angry about it. You know, no. At the end of the day, I understand. But if it's going to be that quick, then we're going to sign some more free agents. We're going to go make the blockbuster trade. We're going to do those things. I think the trajectory that we were on was correct. It was to have a team that next year could maybe make a big trade that could, you know, and I think you see the signs of it right now. When they play well on offense, they win. You know, there's a good defense there. And I give Steve all the credit. I give the coaches all the credit, but I'm part of that building process.
Yeah.
So had that just stayed for maybe through this year and maybe made the big free agent signing this year to get them over the top, I think that the Panthers could win the NFC South for years to come.
Self-aware is a phrase that comes to mind here. First of all, that was all about David Tepper, which I think is fair, 100% about David Tepper. Secondly, if you had control over personnel, final say over personnel, and you were the build it slowly, why in the hell did you trade for Sam Darnold? Why in the hell did you trade a future, what was it, a 3 to move up to draft Matt Corral?
Mm-hmm.
That is not the behavior of somebody who is patiently building. So we're calling BS on that. But here's the real problem. Because the real problem isn't that the timeline got shorter right underneath Matt Rhule. The goalposts got moved. That ain't the problem. The problem, Matt Rhule, is that you got worse as a head coach. The team performed worse as a head coach. We had this great defense last year, and your team didn't play any better. You didn't perform any better as a head coach. And then this year, it was more dysfunctional. You didn't need Baker Mayfield. The world knew that Baker Mayfield was not a significant upgrade over anybody that the Panthers had on the roster. We all knew that. The only people who didn't know that were named Baker Mayfield, and the people who are married to NFL draft history. Well, he was a former first overall pick. Like, yeah, and we had seen him play. Now, I had been saying all along that Baker was better than the player who stunk in Cleveland, because I do believe that there was a fair amount of injury that hampered his ability to play well. But that doesn't mean that Baker Mayfield was the, you know, a middle-of-the-road starting quarterback in the NFL. No. Most people figured that out. This was not about a timeline.
I love the, you know, they're winning now. You know, I helped build that.
Right, that the whole thing, right?
I was actually on with the Mac and Bone show down in WFNZ yesterday.
As Matt Rhule?
As Matt Rhule. Okay. Matt Rhule was on because they had Steve Wilkes on before that. They're like, oh, we got to bring on Matt Rhule too. I literally said those same things.
Right.
With them being like, oh, yeah, I did.
Well, do we know that was Matt Rhule? Did you go on the season podcast with Peter Schrager?
Maybe I did. Maybe I didn't.
I mean, maybe Matt should have just set that out.
Maybe.
Right? Maybe he should have set. But that's the line he has been on, because he used that at Nebraska's introductory press conference. You heard the clip from mm-hmm. that where he talked about, they asked him, how fast can you win? He said, well, I really shouldn't talk about timelines, and the timeline got me in trouble. No, man, the timeline didn't get you in trouble. The fact that you weren't helping them, forget about accelerate the timeline, mm-hmm. you weren't giving anybody hope that you could even maintain your timeline. Because David Tepper didn't want to fire you. If he wanted to fire you, he wouldn't have let you come back for year three. David Tepper felt he had no choice but to fire you. And I even said it was a mercy firing at the time, because I believe that Tepper likes Matt Rhule, and I think Matt is a likable guy. But that's delusional to think that you get fired because if it was, I didn't realize it was going to be a two-year timeline. We would have signed some free agents. What? You did.
Hmm.
Was Hassan Reddick a free agent?
Yeah, he was.
Okay. I'm. Maybe I missed it.
Robbie Anderson, I think, was a free agent.
No, no. They did they sign him from the Jets, or they get him in a trade with the Jets?
Either way, you brought him in.
Robbie Anderson, though, was never that good.
Is he doing anything in Arizona right now?
I don't think so.
I have to look that up.
I saw a promo for the in-season. What is that HBO show?
Oh, Hard Knocks?
Hard Knocks. The in-season Hard Knocks. So I saw him on the sidelines at Arizona, like at a practice or something. Oh, so I saw a picture of him. So I have no idea if he's doing anything. Look, the Panthers, even though they are 3-4 under Steve Wilkes, right?
Mm-hmm.
3-4 under Steve Wilkes, which is good considering them. And by the way, winning the NFC South for years to come, ain't that big a deal. Because if you think about the NFC South, Tampa is old, and the bill is coming due for all of the players that they re-signed and essentially paid their contract out over time, right? That credit card bill is coming due for Tampa. Who's the quarterback next year for the Buccaneers?
Me?
Might be. What's the future of the New Orleans Saints? They also don't have a quarterback for next year. What's the future of the Atlanta Falcons? Marcus Mariota is not the answer.
Desmond Ridder they drafted?
Maybe. So winning the NFC South shouldn't be all that great of an achievement. Except that when you're the Panthers, and I may have this wrong, but I don't think so, in their entire history have never had consecutive winning seasons. It would seem, although they have won the division, I think 3 years in a row.
Shout out 7-8-1.
7-8-1 won a division. So with all that said, they could be the team that could run that division for an extended stretch. but that doesn't mean that is an incredible feat. So, look, they have some really good players. I think what they need more than anything is stability, and they haven't really... They had it really with Ron Rivera, who wasn't a great coach. He's a good coach. But they had it with Rivera. And believe it or not, they had it with John Fox, who was a lesser version of Ron Rivera, but about the same type of coach. Conservative, defensive-oriented, let's not beat ourselves type of thing, but you know, he wasn't going to go out and win games for you. So the Panthers have a future, but they still have a lot to build. I'd like to see Steve Wilkes get that gig. I really would. I think he would be the perfect guy to help lead them forward. And I think he cares about the gig. I think it matters to him as a Charlotte guy. So hopefully it'll work out for him. But Matt Rhule is utterly delusional if he thinks this was a timeline acceleration problem, because it wasn't. But enjoy Nebraska.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
If you love to travel, you love cool experiences, you are going to love Viator. Viator is the world's leading travel experience marketplace. And for me, Sun Valley skiing is huge on my bucket list. So I just opened the Viator app, searched Sun Valley, and boom, custom ski and boot fittings and tickets delivered right to our condo. Pretty unbelievable. Just download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking. One app, over 300,000 experiences you'll remember. Do more with Viator.